Hello, welcome to LA Lit 5. We're here with Jen Hoffer from Los Angeles. LA Lit is an interview show where we allow writers to come on and read from their work, and we talk to them about it. It's not a standard reading format. We let them read a little bit, we talk a little bit, we read a little bit, talk a little bit. And we interview writers primarily from LA, but also we see the show as reflecting the changing nature of Los Angeles as a literary space, and we do interview writers that just happen to be in LA doing a reading somewhere, something like that. So we try to make LA Lit a space that reflects the diversity and the changing nature of the literary scene in Los Angeles. I'm your host, Matthew Timmons.
And I'm Stephanie Ryu, and today, like Matt said, we have the pleasure of Jen Hoffer's company, and she's going to start us right off with a poem.
Less than more than less again, then again none, not one, the absence of necessary silence. Looking out of the window of a hotel at the bombing of Baghdad is like looking through a soda straw, Doug Erlenbosch. How do you experience something you're not experiencing? Scott Pound. Crashing upon the shore, nothing is too coordinated, complex of designed to prevent congregation overly, to shush demurely, resolutely unnoticed. We will continue until there is no need. Necessarily alone, participatory transit, the self looks out from the self and is known public, a red line in outline, built too late as what was being before is not known exactly, so as through a participatory process to console, beauty crabapples nicely, not largely. We had made plans, but so what? To be being is birdsong in the blue of having been. Having is wrinkled, pocked against the marked canvas, the marketed power, folds in the former floor, shush refusal, what is not heard, all-terrain excess, convoy rebuttal, obeys no drafted cartography, in a rising wind or bounty not acknowledged, plainly a case of terrifically bad luck, clear-cut, fledgling. Those glints aren't birds, they're answers that never asked, like the green grass grinning thirstily, sweet, grown thinner with no effort, if it can be said that lack is not effort, or exceptions obey brittle memoranda escalating in the realm of the predictable register, sight, preparation for preparation, measured actions, sights, thousands and thousands, the familiar smell, the unrecognizable view, thousands and thousands. Someone made this bed, now lie in it. At some not prescribed point, all of us having been and not being birds, also not sudden, nonetheless breathless, airborne, or never the more breathing in the grounded precision of activity, which buried bears no resemblance to bombing, which bears no resemblance to freedom, which is a conglomerate word and bears no resemblance, and resemblance endures beyond understanding, which wordless is many migratory words, scarcely resourceful, and which, like archaeology, bears no end of exploration. The threads of not listening wrap diligently, the having changed by the being changed, or spool in looks unwelcome, easily explained, if not so easily avoided, outrage falls livid on the man-made prepared surface, which otherwise would be inaccessible, very quiet. Mostly we export products and feelings, products being trends, bents, or belligerents, or being unable to accept the being otherwise engaged, and so less likely to appreciate that many birds happen in filaments or slices against a gradual forming the alternate daybreak, tilted and mercurial, but who's counting, faltering, faulting, in grid-like formation, canisters at the ready or gridlock on purpose, so as to be hemmed in. Mostly a demise in manners, as designated patterns organically lift toward an outer limit not defined in sights, peripherally trained fields, empty, tirades, empty. As there is no stated location, we are everywhere or we are nowhere, as there is no stated location. That obsessive thought, sky, sparrow, winding streets, a plan, like a crow, like a door, not a call to arms, a cement block, not unlike servitude in a long pink dress, tethered. There are ways not to forget. Aids, colors, places, homes, withers every night on the vine, and every day reconstitutes at attention, constituent parts in vehicles, no destination, in the absence of color, a tangible color, a loud noise, a loud, unpleasant noise. If a wall is a river, a bit of interference flowing past the checkpoint makes the image accurate, made by the maker of rivers. If a wall can be beautiful, why is it not made beautiful?
Thank you. That was a poem from your recent manuscript, One.
My as yet unfinished manuscript.
Yes. What was the genesis for that manuscript?
Well, there's this war that seems to be happening in our name. And the genesis for that manuscript was thinking about the kinds of losses and violences that are perpetrated on a grand scale by the excessive exercise of power, and also trying to think through personal or more singular losses that any person experiences, but really thinking about what it feels like to me or to people I care about when each of us loses maybe one person, as everybody has experienced or will experience, and then what that feels like when multiplied by tens or hundreds or thousands all happening at once, and also trying to answer over and over again or ask over and over again the very basic question of how one manages to speak or act or write or make things in the face of a level of atrocity that feels absolutely silencing.
You know, that, I mean, and that relates to a line from the poem, someone made this bed, now lie in it. It's, you know, how it command, you know, your work is commanding us to deal with this and to bring ourselves to this situation and really kind of deal with it. And I want to talk more generally about your work, such as the Anthology of Contemporary Poetry by Mexican Women that you have out, which is a project that you did. It's kind of like a translation. Tell us about putting that together.
Well, I lived in Mexico City for 3 years before I moved here to Los Angeles, the other Mexico, in my opinion. And when I first visited Mexico City many, many years ago as a traveler, I instantly became fascinated, or actually Mexico generally, not just Mexico City, I became fascinated to learn of how much really amazing work was being produced by writers that I had had no access to from here. Even though I'm bilingual, I can read Spanish perfectly fine, but their books aren't getting here in any language at all. And I started thinking about translation and the politics of translation, whose work gets translated, which voices get brought in an authorized way or in an English language way, made accessible to readers here who might not be have access to other languages. As I don't have access to any languages other than Spanish and English. And I got really excited about the idea of translating younger writers, writers who are working currently, who are going to be alive for a long time, producing work, who are making what it is, who are making the artistic communities that make up Mexican literary scenes currently. So I moved there. I put out an enormous call for work all over Mexico in every state. I hung posters in every Casa de la Cultura. I sent out a million things to literary journals and newspaper, cultural supplements and newspapers, and I got hundreds of manuscripts and books back, and I read all of them. It was very painful and very wonderful also. And I also read a lot on my own. I would ask any writer I met, I would ask them for names of who they thought would be interesting for me to read, and I would explore presses that I found, small presses, and then look at every book on their list and try to find something that interested me. And of these hundreds of writers that I read, I selected 11 for the anthology, and then together with the writers, we selected work for the anthology, which I then translated into English.
Well, and I wonder, what's interesting is kind of a larger project that you've seen, that different things that you do tie into, as far as you talk about the politics of translation. And while you're talking about that, you mentioned these different communities that coalesce around different literary scenes. And you also do a lot of kind of political activism through, the City of Angels Ladies Bicycling Association. I don't know if that's necessarily like a political action committee, but
right. Back in Los Angeles, it's totally political.
Yeah, right. So tell us more about some of these other projects you have going and how it ties into your writing, especially this collection.
Well, that's actually an especially difficult question for me right now because I was co-directing a nonprofit last year where we provided a free humanities education to low-income adults, and that organization ran into some economic difficulties, as so many organizations do, and it ended up dissolving or going on hiatus. I don't know if it's permanently dissolving. But I'm in a moment in my life where I think that it's imperative for us to find different models of political action that are not depleting to us as artists or as people, that are not expensive, so that we are not reliant on either government agencies or people of means to support the actions that we do, that are not exhausting, and that reaffirm the humanity of everyone involved, whether that's the humanity of someone who is radically dehumanized by the way the structures of power work in this country, or the humanity of somebody who's trying to right that dehumanization. And in a sense, I feel like what ties all of my work together is a desire to be in the world as it is and experience and recognize that world. So riding my bicycle through a city where most people don't bicycle is part of being in the city in a certain way and understanding the texture of that city from up close. But also to attempt to live in a way that creates the world as I wish it would be, which it is not that world now, a world where all humans and other beings are respected and treated with dignity and given education and healthcare and housing and food and drink, where everyone is wined and dined in the manner to which they would like to become accustomed. And trying to create spaces to do that. And I'm in a moment in my life where there are very few organizations that are working that way for me. But even when I'm involved in an organization that doesn't work that way, for instance, I work as an interpreter for the Los Angeles County Superior Court System, and I can tell you for sure that is not an organization whose main goal is the humanization of those that have been marginalized. I try in my work it can be as simple as looking someone in the eye through the bars and saying good morning and smiling, or asking how they are, or putting my hand through the bars and touching their shoulder as I'm interpreting for them. And I'm not saying that that is going to completely change the system, of course, but it does make that person feel like I recognize that they're a person and I care about them in that moment. So I don't know if that even begins to answer your question.
That's a great answer. Well, otherwise, I want to mention that you have a book called Slide Rule out. It's been out since 2002 on Subpress, and we talked about the anthology. You have a chapbook out. I can't remember.
It's on Seeing Eye Books, which is local.
Right,
Los
Guy Bennett.
Yeah.
Okay, and so you can find Jen Hoffer's work, and I suggest that you do if you haven't before. If you look online, she has a lot of different work online, including the 315 experiment with Bernadette Mayer, Leanne Brown, Danica Densmore, and it's through Owl Press, right?
Yeah, that's actually a book.
It's also a book. One other thing that I was interested in when I looked you up online is that we talked about this earlier, before the show here, but I swear like you translate everything. You do a lot of translating work. That anthology is a good example. But also you translate for Exquisite Corpse. There's all kinds of work that you've translated, and I wonder how that relates to your writing practice. And it's just
how that relates to my writing practice. Well, it relates on many different levels. The process of inhabiting someone else's language, someone else's vocabulary, someone else's syntax, and whatever voice they're using in the particular text that you're translating is one of the best ways that I found to get away from myself. Although you never get away from yourself, my way of understanding, translation is an extremely intimate act of reading, right? So my way of understanding the work that I'm translating is my way of understanding it. And if each of us in this room were to take the same text or phrase and try to translate it, we would come up with as many different versions as there are people in the room, which is a wonderful thing. So I'm never not in my writing, I'm never not in my translating, but it's completely different to try to inhabit the ways someone else moves through language, and it helps me think about ways to inhabit my own language in different ways and to inhabit different selves in everything that I write, or to make room to move beyond any idea of singularity of quote-unquote voice, which is something I don't really believe in at all. So on that level it helps, and on the other level I would like to do everything humanly possible to work against the cultural myopias that exist in this country, and one way to do that as a literary person is to translate and to try to make the larger cultural conversation include other perspectives than those that are provided in our regularly programmed schedule.
And for me, in reading Slide Rule, for example, I did have a sense that even though each line seems to be slipping into the next, at the same time, in many poems, each line seems to be a distinct entity. So tying into not having a monopolized voice, there is one poem, August Amateur Remedy, that specifically came to mind. And I feel, in a way, I could think of the analogy of a frame-by-frame animation where everything's sort of coming together and yet still made of all these little separate parts in a distinct way. And I feel that this continues in the one manuscript to a certain degree. And it made me want to ask you, how do you imagine and how do you make a line of poetry? And if you wanted to read that poem too, then.
Well, actually, I can read that poem, or I can also, one of the through lines between Slide Rule and One, although they're totally different projects, is that there are, running through Slide Rule are these poems where each line is a sentence, and those poems also exist in the One, not those same poems, but that form exists in One as well. So I could also just read one of those, or I can read Amateur Remedy, either way. But I go about making my lines by listening. So maybe I'll read, maybe I won't read Amateur Remedy, although you can ask me to read it. But I'll read this other poem from One, if I can look at it. And I think it does a little bit what you're talking about. Will be. Shall we not dock? Ensconced. Fragile declaratives, unfalse, else proclivities shall this fond body, this fond bereavement. As there are many lines, is. Enmeshed rivulets waxy, at attention, ways and means. Lost behind lip service, to see and to say. As there are many fine lines, lost in the map's precision. A procedure under bandages. To be burnt unseen is something else. Vectors combine in a single axis, a sheet folded in halves, bonded, a chord struck, an orange sound, unresolved. A number of pine cones in a brown paper bag, dispute stifled, a former ride, misallocations, riveting flame, riveting frame. A shift is not cheap. Never again unfinished, as if we shall not speak. Silhouette, shadow, bodily harm, bodily pleasures, unarmed boxcars, tinsel strewn, ante up. Days and days, swift dwindle. Boxcars built to last. Tall tales pitched at hummingbird pace. Capitulation. There is no single axis. Tinsel strewn. Smoke in liquid form. False perimeters. False filing system. organized heat, dissolving the last of an inexact house. In fact, there is no axis. Spun unsuspecting, there are ways to learn. Chemistry of silvering hours slid unsuspecting farther, shimmered from your Pacific, a swindle, nesting shallowly in the man-made, an overhang or an overpass, a swallow and bee boxes beyond, red at the very tip, adorned in a hollow, in a hollow.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Following from listening, I remember once hearing you say that you often write while you're in public, and connected then, where and what is the listening? And also, how does it embody the rhythms that you put into your work?
Well, if you're in the right mood, the listening can happen anywhere. And if you're in the wrong mood, no matter where you are, the listening will not occur. Or at least that's how it is for me. I like to be in public. I like to create small spaces of quiet in loud public places. So I often write on public transit or on the street or in bars or at readings, films, art openings, next to the train tracks. I've enjoyed writing in the Not a Cornfield site. It's about 5 minutes from here. And my sense is that the listening or the kind of paying attention that poetry asks us to do is available absolutely anywhere, but many of the things and ways of the world are very distressingly and sometimes violently distracting, and it's very difficult to focus that attention. So a lot of, I think every writer has little tricks or their own little private song and dance that they do to try to get themselves into the space where they can write, and a lot of mine have to do with honing attention. And in a sense, I feel like art in general asks us to pay attention differently. And that's its deepest political import. And in terms of your question about rhythm or music, there's a line, it's so cheesy to quote yourself, and here I am, I'm gonna be cheesy on the internet radio for the whole world to hear. There's a line in one of the poems in Slide Rule, that poem ends, you can listen to it as music, or you can listen to music. And often when I'm reading poetry or talking about poetry to people who aren't poets or who think they don't like poetry, which is, you might have noticed, most of the world, I say that to me, poetry is music. You can listen to a poetry reading the same way that you go to a show or a concert. That is, you let it wash over you, something will remind you of something else, you start to daydream, you start to think about other things, and that's part of what poetry is for, is to put you in that space. And different kinds of texts have different kinds of musics, and I try to express those in the ways that I write.
Kind of along the same lines, I wanted to ask, I'm going to quote from you if you don't mind.
That's not cheap,
that's
respectful.
Good. There's a few lines in the last piece you read called vectors combine in a single axis, a number of pine cones in a brown paper bag, and then you get to there is no single axis, which is kind of repeated a couple times. And I was thinking about your writing, and similarly to what Stephanie was talking about, the rhythms that you work and also some of the repetition that you use. Oftentimes in your poems, I find like words just kind of separate by themselves, and with using the layout of the page to actually spatially separate them, using long dashes to, you know, indicate a pause. And yet, these sections that kind of come where a bunch of words kind of scattered across the page always seem to coalesce for me, and yet I never feel like there was a single access, like kind of drawing them all together. And I wonder, to talk about that, the writing of it, but I wonder also in the way that you read your work, I was struck the very first time I heard you read at a CalArts Visiting Artists series, and I think you read that last poem with the pine cones in a paper bag, and I think that was the one image that has played through my mind until it just played again. So if you could talk to me about how you're writing like that, drawing these words together in a kind of rhizomatic manner, and also how you read that type of work.
Well, I'll answer the second question first because it's really fast and easy. I read the work in the way that it makes meaningful sense to me. And period. I mean, I read it in the way that I hear it and feel it. And you might read it a different way, and that's utterly acceptable to me. And in terms of the question of access and writing, if you think of maybe a child's imagining of the way the world turns on an axis, right? And you might be a child and imagine the world as a globe that you've seen in your classroom or living room or wherever. You've seen a globe and there's an axis, you know, stuck through it and it's spinning. And there's this idea that there's just that one axis, right? You can't turn on more than one axis. And I think that what I'm trying to explore in my work and in my being in the world is that that may or may not be true. Our lives are utterly filled with repetition on every level. I mean, on the most mundane level, you know, like most of us brush our teeth once or twice a day, every day, make our coffee, make our food, whatever we do, go to our jobs, put on our socks, you know, whatever. And then on enormous and significant levels of the most radical adventures that happen to us often are things that repeat and mutate. And so I'm interested in this idea that there is no single axis in the sense that something, the same thing might be spinning around again and again the way a day happens or events recur cyclically in the world, but not only are the events and days not the same as themselves the second or second hundred or second millionth time they come around, but we are not the same as ourselves either when we revisit those events or words. So that you might arrive at the same line or the same word or the same thought, and because the slant of light coming in through the window or the breath of the wind is slightly different against you, you might encounter it in a completely different way. And I'm interested in experiencing that myself. And it would be very pleasing to me if others read my work and experience that as well.
Well, did you want to read another poem?
Sure. Yeah. So. Do we have time for a poem that's about 5 or 6 minutes long?
Of course we do.
I've not been keeping track.
Yeah.
Okay. Less and less, or more and more, or less, as if any of this, look here, were really necessary, any more than suggestions, birdsong carpeting a city street. We move in ceaseless company, each of us wrapped in an expensive and imperturbable anonymity. Roger Angel. Anything goes, here, here, or nothing stops. One machine is a space, while one is a vehicle. The chores structured in time, having become a sequined somewhat actuality, or why I never began to begin again. Something began for me, cawing, uncontrolled. A vehicle, boxy, flapping, open in the harnessed vehicular wind, twisting, can it, contoured, be boxed? Strong-armed. There would have been a bridge or boxcar under which incidents would have accumulated, wedding photos under the 18th wheel, or never having learned to weld the connections, broken reels propped or stacked, having to be made elsewise, capable thought not always willing, winnowed down, twice lost, desperately loose on the prowl. The chores, a distraction from the tasks at hand, the ceiling glittery and suggestive and green, the bartender's vest glittery, framed by the doorway, framing the asphalt patterned to match the topography of this place, fashioned after another place in another time. Twice lost, which is nothing in comparison. In comparison, luminous reeds, in hiding, heavy. Heavy, soft, full-bodied grasses, incomparably inclined to avoid, unable to avoid the advance, which is noticeably nothing. Those trees illuminate a music which goes against explanation and eachness. The silvery green or a green breeze glittery asks nothing, in other words, everything. Though thingness belongs to no asking, belonging is asking. Overcome is blue on another name. Sky view for sky in past tense didn't happen, so didn't have or find or follow a way to say it. Brand name here, to numb by hook or by number a lawn where no lawn should, littered with casings, husks, temptations, a day gone lax with likes and with unrequited ease, as there is in this metropolis such a dizzy bungalow sense of radiating spokes with no center to sing of, or asking. Glassy particles floating fake is belonging, saying, lending, unexpectedly screened in looking out. The potential, as they say, is limits, limitless. The glass transmits movement and cessation, trembling, conical, as the wave wanes duller, then glints against the line in viral sunlight. Where are you, the glass, if there is no more to say no more? For purposes of identification and contact, containment's better business, a number has been provided, decorative, a useful tool for aforementioned purposes of identification, and the suggestion the mere whiff provides a ground upon which to contemplate the preemptive utility of total death as compared to partial death, for which there is no comparison. Behind this velvet curtain, an absolute lurks, behind that velvet curtain, a special prize, for which there is no claimant, though a stand-in will suffice, and good thing, too, as circumvention of the aforementioned process of identification requires meticulously trained stunt personnel, themselves provided with iron-on numbers, decals, tattoos, and the various paraphernalia of this, our constitutionally guaranteed right to the guarantees afforded us by our Constitution. What is there to do? Why this here? What to do? But look, and look again. The intrusion of information, vultures, impressions, Velcro, brass, opposition, words, real authentic gravesites, stick-ups, butter-ups, higher-ups. The intrusion of Billy the Kid, Ornette Coleman, the movies, plush seats, dives, bars, back alleys, bowling alleys, former bowling alleys, former farmers of America, corduroy jackets, special favors, special operations, soldiers called gunmen, soldiers called soldiers, soldiers called settlers, soldiers called martyrs. Who will take all these calls? Who will make the call? Put an end to the endings. Begin the process of ending to begin. It is the world as it is. Indifference as it is. Soars. We are wrapped with distraction, as we are prone to not soar, but prodded progress, sort of, forward along the faulty gutters of a dog-eared primer. The internment of interruption, the daydream, what a shame, micromanagement on the level of individuation, the mesa, a flat shelf with nobody's name on it, on the level, after the fact, the future, the better bet to mold the barter system, no salary, no guarantee, the way of the winds, the road, as compared to the road, map, the winds, the way. Cut, cut, sinewy, voluptuously visionary, unlettered, uttered, between the land and the land and the land, made possible passage, made artificial, less land. Land itself more than authenticity, its humanity lacking, causing common humanity. To have made oneself to know and then not to know, to hum beautifully in time with the axles, harboring some seed in the dry dark.
Thanks a lot. I think we're going to take a break and then come back and talk more with Jen. Thanks.